Foyer, foyer, foyer. All persons having business before the Honorable, the United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the United States and His Honorable Court. Be seated, please. Case number 06, 2280 NL. Southeastern Federal Power Customers, Inc. v. Francis J. Harvey, Secretary of U.S. Department of the Army NL, State of Florida, Appellant. Mr. Thompson for Appellant State of Florida. Mr. Lindsey for Appellant State of Alabama. Mr. Gray for Appellant USA NL. Mr. Brown for Appellant State of Georgia NL. And Mr. Bennett, Appellant Southeastern Federal Power Customers, Inc.
Good morning.
Good morning, and may it please the court, Parker Thompson for the state of Florida. I would first like to thank the court for postponing the power setting of this oral argument because of the hospitalization of my partner, Jim Banks. Unfortunately, his condition does not permit him to be here today. It is my intention to utilize the full 10 minutes because I think it will take that long, and Mr. Lemke will rebut for both of us. If, in fact, I have additional time, of course, I'll reserve it. I wanted first to address the issue of the statutory authority. The original complaint brought by the SEFPC based its complaint on the applicable statutes for authorizing, back in 1946, the Flood Control Act and the Water Supply Act. The settlement agreement that was reached in this case in 3.1.7 asserts that the Corps has the authority to enter into that settlement agreement based upon the same three components: the initial authorization, the Flood Control Act, and the Water Supply Act. The interim contracts, which are attached and are to be signed in accordance with the settlement agreement, are the same three. The Corps has determined that it has authority under all three of the statutes.
Actually, isn't that in a gilding the lily a bit? Haven't all the parties to the agreement agreed that the flood control statute is not relevant?
No, the parties, Your Honor, correct. The parties to the agreement have, but they cannot deal with the fact that the Flood Control Act is the only authority given by Congress to make withdrawals. And withdrawals are authorized under the settlement agreement, and therefore the Flood Control Act is in play, despite the fact that having previously relied on it, they now disavow it.
I thought the Flood Control Act only applied to surplus water.
Well, that is correct, Your Honor. That's why the only permitted withdrawals other than with congressional approval are of surplus water. There is no surplus water here. In fact, Congress determined some years ago that there was no surplus water and had to give a withdrawal. Therefore, it had to authorize a withdrawal permit for Gwinnett County. There is no surplus water.
Isn't it fair to say that your stronger argument is on the Water Supply Act?
I would say, Your Honor, that both of them are strong arguments, and for the reason that there are patent withdrawals under the settlement agreement. The keys, Your Honor, are those that are presented and are happening today. Will happen yesterday, will happen tomorrow, and they are covered by 3.1.3. They are pre-contract amounts. They are continuations of contracts that existed and expired in 1989, have been held in place by the Corps, calling them sometimes holdover contracts or whatever. Those contracts have been continued at an accelerated payment, and water is being withdrawn under those contracts now.
But this, is that being withdrawn pursuant to state law?
No, it is water that cannot be withdrawn by state law unless it is first granted storage.
That's my point. I thought part of the argument was that the settlement agreement simply moved the water into a new category of storage for water supply, and that it was state law which was going to control the actual withdrawing of the water from municipal
use. No, withdrawal has to be permitted by the state, to be sure, but it, under the settlement agreement, it is likewise permitted by the Corps. It is permitting the withdrawal of the water under the holdover contracts with the Corps, not with the state. There are waters that are being released because the Corps releases them. They are not, I am sure that there is a state permit as well.
Counsel, there's one thing I would like to ask as a favor. It seemed to me in the briefs there were a number of arguments presented that were either not made to the district court or were not in your reply brief, weren't even made in the opening brief. If you're going to refer, or you or your co-counsel are going to refer to any of those arguments not presented in the district court or that are presented in your reply brief but not in your opening brief, I wish you would label them as such and explain why we should listen to them.
Fine, Your Honor. Withdrawals are defined in the settlement agreement under paragraph 2 as being waters diverted for M&I water supply from the Lake Lanier project or from the Chattahoochee River downstream from the dam and south of, and to south of Atlanta. Withdrawals are therefore defined as something that happens under the settlement agreement. 3.1.1 says that there are storage to accommodate these withdrawals. 3.1.1A, for instance, for Gwinnett, says...
But they don't authorize withdrawals per se, as it wasn't, and that wasn't Judge Rogers' question, wasn't it?
They authorize withdrawals per se under 3.1.3. That is for the pre-contract amounts.
I'm confused about that. I understood the actual withdrawal had to take place only after Georgia, the state of Georgia, authorized it.
Well, as I said before, Your Honor, I assume that Georgia has authorized the withdrawals because they're happening yesterday, today, and will happen
tomorrow.
Well,
but that's a separate question as to who has the legal authority to authorize withdrawals. My understanding of the government's position is that their agreement does not specifically authorize withdrawals. True or not true?
Not true.
It specifically authorizes withdrawals?
Certainly. Specifically in 3.1.3.
Which says?
For pre-contract amounts.
In other words, I guess what we're focusing on is the fact that the water is being placed in storage for water supply. But if Georgia refused to issue a permit, that water could not be withdrawn.
Georgia's already issued the permit.
Well, I know, but I mean, just so we're on the same page legally. Let me ask you, though, following up on Judge Silverman's question, one of the arguments made is that you have waived the argument about Corps' authority to allow withdrawals. Is that correct?
No, that is not correct.
And that is not correct because you have...
We argued in objecting to the settlement agreement that the Corps did not have authority. We argued in our opening brief before this court that they did not have authority. They didn't reply because they've abandoned the argument of compliance with the Flood Control Act. Turning to the Flood Control Act, the three...
Did you spend a lot of time on that as opposed to the Water Supply Act?
What did I say? I apologize.
And the Flood Control Act.
I'm sorry. I apologize, Your Honor. Turning to the Water Supply Act. 390B paren D says that modifications to change the purposes, add a purpose, require congressional approval. No congressional approval was sought. There are two grounds in which you have to go to Congress for approval, that the modifications would seriously affect the purposes for the for which the project was authorized.
And which purpose are you referring to as been seriously affected?
Certainly hydropower is seriously affected. And secondly, all of the downstream interests are affected.
Well, no, wait a minute. The downstream interest, it seems to me, gives Florida and Alabama standing, at least on the EPA questions. But I don't see how Florida and Alabama have standing to, and the only purpose that is referred to in the project is the hydropower. The only relevant purpose for you is the hydropower. And I don't see how you have standing to raise that issue when the companies that use the hydropower have settled and have agreed to the settlement.
Congress set the purposes of hydropower. It is clear from the statute. It is clear from the authorization documents that were in Congress and precipitated the law authorizing the building of the Buford Dam that the purposes of the hydropower itself were to take care of the downstream interests, which are identified in this order as recreation, fish and wildlife management, and water supply to the city of Atlanta.
Wait a minute. I don't see that at all, Council. Where do you see the hydropower purpose as relating to fish?
Because the division reports made as part of the Corps' application to build.
You don't even make that argument in your brief.
I believe, Your Honor, we do.
I didn't see anything about fish as part of hydropower.
No, it is one of the incidental uses.
Did you make that argument in your brief, anything about hydropower?
Yes, we referred to the sections of the division documents, the history, all of which are in the joint appendix, which state the Stockdale.
The answer to my question is no, you didn't refer to that in the brief, and it's got nothing to do with the price of tea.
Your Honor, most certainly does. The Stockdale report, which we cited repeatedly, describes in detail what the documents were that were before the Congress and stated the purpose. And the document, they showed.
Why don't you deal with my basic question, which is why do you have standing to assert a violation of the purpose, being the purpose being to provide hydroelectric power downstream, when the users of the hydroelectric power have settled and they're the ones that have standing to raise that issue? I'm not saying that the states don't have standing in the case, because you still may have a standing on the major structural or operational changes, but on the purpose with respect, and standing has to be judged claim by claim. And with respect to the hydroelectric power purposes, I don't see how you have standing. Why am I wrong?
Because the downstream states have their interest because water flows to them through hydropower. That's what takes the water downstream. It goes through the dam and goes downstream. If water isn't used for hydropower, if it is taken out of hydropower because the hydropowerists were willing to sell it for $3 million of cash, then they have substituted cash, which doesn't flow downstream, for water, which does flow downstream when it's used for hydropower. When they take out 23% and reassign it to storage, held in the lake, whether or not it is used. You asked me the question about Georgia withdrawals. Held in the lake, unless it is used, then necessarily water does not flow downstream to serve the interest of the downstream states, which are Alabama.
In other words, hydropower is against your interest. Use of hydropower is against your interest.
No, the use of hydropower is in our interest. The sale of hydropower for $3 million is definitely not in our interest.
But not because of the hydropower purposes, but because of separate purposes.
No, because there is no hydropower to that extent. There can't be hydropower because they've sold it.
I'm having difficulty understanding you on this, but perhaps counsel for the other side will be able to explain it.
Well, on the operational change, do you want to address
operational that? Change, the Mr. Stockdale, in his report for the Corps, conceded that there are operational changes.
What's the baseline we measure major operational change against?
Well, I think that some of it is just common sense. How much is 23% or 24%?
Yeah.
How can essentially a quarter of the use be changed without it be a major operational
do we look
change?
In measuring whether it's major, do we look at what incremental changes have been made before, perhaps? Or do you just look at start with zero as the baseline?
I think you should start at zero, but in fact,
because otherwise,
the claim that has been made that this is just a substitution is flat out wrong. The Stockdale report shows that the current withdrawals for water purposes are 145,000 acre feet. What's involved in the settlement agreement is 66% more, or 240,000 acre feet.
And what's the dividing line between a major operational change and a minor operation?
There is no precise definition, but common sense certainly says that
if 5%, if 5% had been reallocated, what do you think?
Yeah, I think that 5% would have been a legitimate non-minor, although I'm not sure of that, because what Mr. Stockdale points out is that when you go from hydropower to water storage, you no longer deliver hydropower at peak periods, you're delivering it essentially off-peak. I think that in and of itself, which could be triggered at 5%, it could be triggered at 3%, I'm not sure. But that in itself would be a major operation.
Council, if it isn't very clear where you draw the line, what is our scope of review of this settlement agreement?
So the scope of the agreement, Your Honor, is...
Oh, our scope of review, Counsel.
Scope of review.
In other words, if it's not clear where the line is to be drawn, why shouldn't we defer to the settlement agreement between the parties?
The scope of review, Your Honor, I submit is de novo because we're involved in statutory interpretation.
Yes, but shouldn't we, if it's not clear where you draw the line, and you have a settlement agreement?
I would think, Your Honor, if it were questionable, you might defer. But I fail to see how a quarter of the entire usable water conservation pool being changed in purpose, and thereby, by the Corps' own admission, changing the operational nature of their operations of the lake, must be a major operational change, whatever does that. I suggested to Judge Kavanaugh it could be a very small amount. It would depend on what it actually turned out to be. I'm sorry, Your Honor.
No, it's fine. I interrupted. Sorry. So if we were to be persuaded by your position, what is left for the district court to do? In other words, your response to Judge Kavanaugh was that this is common sense.
If the court reverses the settlement agreement in order for these issues to be reviewed, then the parties might try and concoct another settlement agreement, or the plaintiff's
what
complaint would go forward.
The district court's approval of the settlement agreements. All right, and I understand our standard of review is abuse of discretion, but if there's an error of law, that's de novo, but that's an abuse of discretion. So I just need to be clear, there's been a lot of chatter in the briefs about the record here and the district court's failure to make certain findings. I just want to be clear what you see would be the future proceeding in this case.
The future proceeding would be for the district to start by doing what it didn't do. And that is, when you have an APA case, you call for the Corps to present an administrative record. And I believe that administrative record would include all of the confidential mediated settlement agreements in this case, which were
I thought your position was that this was a major operational change. So how would any evidence they'd have to just get congressional approval, right?
They do have to get congressional approval.
Yeah, I don't understand what you're saying in response to Judge Rogers' question.
No, she asked me what would happen to the record. And then there would be a record.
The question is, why haven't you put in any evidence in this case to establish that there was what the baseline was and what the change was?
Well, Your Honor, my answer to that, I guess, is Judge Jackson set the rule that they could go and mediate and come up with a settlement, and then it needed to be submitted to them, to him, for approval.
You had every opportunity.
I think the burden.
Did you not have an opportunity to ask Judge Jackson to allow you to put on evidence?
We asked for it.
And? What did you ask for?
We asked.
Did you proffer evidence?
No, we didn't proffer evidence. We asked for an administrative record.
Yes, that's a separate question. You treated this as if it was an APA review.
We proffered evidence, yes, Your Honor. We proffered declarations, affidavits by a whole series of witnesses. Alabama did likewise.
I'm not sure, counsel, this was an APA review case. I don't know how you got it into that. But it was a settlement agreement, which you could have challenged by proffering evidence that it that there was a factual mistake or that there was a legal mistake based on certain facts that you would put into evidence. And you did not take advantage of that.
We did put in evidence, Your Honor, the declarations of the witnesses in evidence, as well as the Stockdale report of the Corps of Engineers. In evidence is the white paper that the Corps of Engineers put together in 2000. All of those are in the record and are cited in the brief for showing what the Corps' views are of what is an operational change and what is the amount of an operational change that would require congressional approval.
Excuse me, counsel. Your argument was basically an estoppel argument against the government, right?
I wouldn't have called it estoppel. They're the ones that manage the...
Well, you tried to use their prior opinions. You tried to use
absolutely.
Other factors that they had relied in the past to say this was an inconsistent position. But you did not put in any evidence yourself as to what the change from the baseline situation was.
That is correct, Your Honor. But in response to Judge Kavanaugh's question, he asked what an operational change is. And we submitted the Corps' position as to what an operational change was as a definition of an operational change. The only thing that was different, said the Corps, between the PAC report of 1989 and the settlement agreement, both called for 240,000 acre feet, both substituted for hydropower water supply.
That was the payment. That was the difference, they said.
No, there was a $3 million. They were contemplating a payment of, surprisingly, $3 million. That's what the Stockdale report said, identical to the one here. The difference is their legal position that somehow a permanent grant of water supply is different than an interim, although the statute does not use either word, the regulations do not use either word.
All right, counsel, I think we have your argument. Am I correct? We're over time.
We are over time.
All right.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. We'll hear from counsel for the state of Alabama.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. I want to begin by referring to Judge Silberman's question about standing. The 11th Circuit confronted a very similar issue, and it's at 1993 in the joint appendix. And what they said was that when the Corps' management of Lake Lanier violates federal law, has adverse impacts downstream to the environment and the economy, that injures Alabama and Florida and creates standing. We think
that is unquestionably true with respect to the major structural or operational changes. But insofar as a purpose of this project was hydroelectric power, I fail to see why you have any standing to assert a violation of that purpose when the beneficiaries of that purpose, i.e. the hydroelectric power companies, say, we're perfectly happy. We've settled.
Yes, sir.
Now, that isn't what 11th Circuit said. You had standing with respect to the whole question of the flow, which does go to the major structural or operational changes. It does not go to the hydroelectric purpose.
Well, with that, I would respectfully disagree, Your Honor, because
you mean the 11th Circuit did specifically refer to the hydroelectric purpose?
No, they didn't, but
so then you're not really disagreeing with me.
Well, I disagree with you in the sense that the creation of hydropower, the water goes through the dam and generates the flow. And so when there's a violation of the federal purpose of hydropower and there's less hydropower, there's less flow. And the 11th Circuit contemplated that a violation of federal law in core operations, i.e. inadequate generation of hydropower, that leads to less flow and that leads to the downstream injury. So we submit we do have standing on that basis. Now, with regard to the question that was asked about major operational change and the standard of review, I would note that Judge Jackson seems to have lost track of that in his opinion. There was no discussion whatsoever by Judge Jackson about major operational change. He cited subsection D of the Water Supply Act, but then said the crux of the matter is effects on project purposes, serious effects on project purposes. He didn't give any analysis of major operational change. And we submit not only does the Stockdale memo, which was written less than a year before these settlement agreements were executed, it states what the baseline was of the current use was 145,000 acre feet, and this was going to take it to 240,000 acre feet. Now, that just happens to be virtually the same amount that the Corps had proposed in the 1989 PAC report, which the Corps concluded
it wasn't quite the same amount. It was much more, wasn't it?
No, sir. The Georgia request in 2000 was for 34%, but in 1989 it was 238,000. The settlement agreement is a little bit more at 240.
Yes.
And they recognized the
It was the 330 that they referred to, wasn't it?
I'm not sure where that number comes from, Your Honor, but the Norwood letter stated that the Corps recognized that the PAC report was created because they had to go to Congress with that sort of reauthorization, reallocation of the reservoir.
And several arguments are made, one of which, of course, is the pay, the compensation, which changes for the purpose question, and secondly, the interim rather than permanent.
Yes, sir. And our response to that is on compensation. We do not believe that a privately brokered deal can override the congressional intent. Congress said this is going to be for hydropower. And as the power amici recognized, one of Congress's objectives was that it would drive down the electric rates for all. Well, the problem is it doesn't quite work out in this situation because now the hydropower preference customers are going to have to go into the higher cost market. And the law of supply and demand says that's not going to cause the price to go down. It's going to cause the price to go up for everyone else. And you have, so you don't have the low-cost, clean hydropower being generated. You've got this private deal being cut without any consideration of the incidental beneficiaries downstream from the hydropower interests. And we submit that is exactly why Congress expressly reserved to itself the question of whether a change that will cause a serious effect on hydropower, whether that change is going to be made. Now, the power amici step right up and say, we agree it's a serious effect on hydropower, but it's been bought off. If this court endorses this compensation mechanism in a privately brokered deal, there would be nothing to stop, at least theoretically, the water supply providers from buying off the downstream navigation interests and buying off the flood control interests, and have a total reauthorization of Lake Lanier without ever going back to Congress. That's where this argument takes you, and I believe Congress expressly reserved to itself that right in subsection D to make that sort of policy decision. Now, I want to note,
if the hydropower customers are paid extra compensation to offset the loss of water coming through.
Yes, sir.
They can then purchase power alternatively.
Yes.
Why should power be any more expensive then?
For them?
First for them.
It won't be.
Right.
The
why is it any more expensive to the consumer?
Well, for the
First of all, that argument wasn't even presented. But secondly, even if it was, why would it be any more expensive to the consumer if it's no more expensive to the hydropower company?
Well, I think we do respond to that in our reply brief to what the power amici said.
Okay.
But we submit, Your Honor, that it would be Congress, as the power amici argue, had a broader objective to keep overall power, not just for the preference customers, overall power lower, the thought being that the low-cost power from the hydropower will cause the higher-cost power producers to reduce their prices to compete. Well, the problem is when you've got now the hydropower preference customers not getting the hydropower, they're made economically whole, but they're going out and increasing the demand for the higher cost power. But the bigger point, Your Honor, is we believe in subsection D, Congress reserved to itself the right to make that sort of determination, not to a privately brokered deal.
You mean the injury here is Congress's injury?
Well, I think the plain language of the statute says there's no dispute that there's a serious effect on hydropower. It's a $3 million a year impact. The issue is, can the private interests say, well, we're bought off, that's okay. And we say Congress said, no, it's going to be up to us if there's a serious effect on project purposes to make that determination. Now, the appellees concede, and Judge Jackson stated, that one of the criteria is that the settlement agreements had to be consistent with public policy. As we stated in our brief, and then in our supplemental submission of authority on August 27th, the judge now presiding over the Alabama case has reaffirmed the initial determination that the entry by the Corps into this settlement agreement was involved affirmative misconduct and was a violation of the Alabama Court's 1990 stay order. We submit that it is inconceivable that Judge Jackson could have concluded that the settlement agreement was consistent with public policy when the federal agency that entered into it in violation of a binding court order of the Northern District of Alabama.
Is that what the 11th Circuit said?
What the 11th Circuit had before it, Your Honor, was the 11th Circuit had Judge Bowdry's preliminary injunction, and Judge Bowdry's preliminary injunction was overturned or vacated on procedural grounds. And at the time of our initial briefing, that was the situation. It had been vacated. But now Judge Jackson has gone back and reaffirmed as law of the case. Judge Magnuson, who is the MDL judge who's been appointed from the District of Minnesota to oversee the Alabama case and four other cases raising ACF challenges to the Corps' operations.
Now, we don't have the same parties in the Alabama case as we do here, do we?
In fact, Your Honor, I believe at least the power customers are now before the MDL proceedings, and which are being handled on a consolidated basis. And I know Gwinnett County is before the MDL proceedings. But at oral argument before the district court, counsel for Georgia said, it's up to the Alabama court to determine whether the agreement was violated. But it's up to the district court in this case, that meaning the whether the, not the agreement, the stay order of 1990 was violated.
Right. Yes.
But it's up to this court in this case to decide whether the standards for approval of the settlement agreement. The Alabama court, nor Judge Magnuson in the MDL proceedings, has never had before it the question of whether the settlement agreement is consistent with public policy. That's an issue that Judge Jackson had to address, although he really didn't say much about it. He apparently viewed it as satisfied, and we submit, for the reasons we stated, that simply cannot be affirmed. A federal agency violating a binding order of a sister federal court cannot settle a case in another federal court in violation of the first court's order and still be consistent with public policy.
What's your position on the baseline for major operational change? I didn't hear that.
I think it ought to be zero, because right. If you don't have it be zero, there was no allocation at all to water supply. If you say, well, we're going to take it at 145,000 acre feet, you're endorsing what had de facto been going on, which is at issue in the Alabama case at 145,000, which was inconsistency with the requirements of the Water Supply Act. So I think you have to go back to zero. And the Stockdale memo establishes that it was 145,000 in 2002, just before the settlement agreement was violated. This takes it to 240,000. And as Mr. Thompson noted, the Corps in the Stockdale memo conceded that was major operational change because it was going to shift the generation of hydropower from the peak times of demand to off-peak. And in fact, at 582, 1162, 1192, and 1428 in the record, there's affidavit testimony consistent with the Stockdale memo.
Can I just ask you one quick question?
Yes, Your Honor.
The government is arguing that one of the arguments that has been waived is the Corps' authority to allocate. Is that correct?
I think what they're saying is the argument arising out of the 1963 Act and other authority, that the Corps has absolutely no authority, even if it satisfies the Water Supply Act, to reallocate.
Well, it's also, I think, the argument that's in the GAO.
That's right. It's the GAOR. Okay. It's basically the GAO.
That's all we're talking about.
That's all we're talking about with that. They're not saying that we've waived the essential water supply subsection right. D argument.
Thank you.
Yes, Your Honor.
Good morning. We'll hear from the government.
May it please the Court, Michael Gray on behalf of the federal appellees. I confirm that the waiver argument, that's how we've done it. There are four things that I want to address. The Corps' role in this, the Court's role in reviewing it, the operational change issue, and then this issue of the Corps' bad faith. First, it's very important to set the context of what the Corps actually does here. The Corps does not decide who gets how much water. It's not in the business of selling water. That's all a matter of state law. What the Corps provides and what it sells is access to water for which you already have an existing right to withdraw. So what this case is really about is a pricing dispute over that access to the water storage. It's not about who gets how much water. SCFPC sought in their complaint the precise remedy that the settlement agreement imposes, which is higher prices paid for storage for this water in the reservoir to effectuate withdrawals, which could be made regardless of the storage. They have the right to withdraw the water from the system. What they pay for is the ability to get it out from the Corps. Now, the second thing is this Court is not reviewing an APA final agency action. And what we have here is a settlement agreement, and it's a limited review just for facial legality. The Corps made an initial determination that it has the authority to carry out this settlement agreement in full legally, but there's still the NEPA process to be undertaken and a full administrative process. There'll be an administrative record created on these Water Supply Act issues, and then there can be challenges.
What if 100% had been reallocated?
Well, I think if 100% had been reallocated, for example, so this is a facial review, and I think at that point the Court could say, well, clearly there's no authority to do that. And
why isn't that true with 25%? That's a quarter of the reservoir.
Because
if you're conceding it with 100%, which you think you have to do.
I think I'm conceding that the Court's review would allow for invalidation. I don't think that the Court should invalidate in these circumstances for the reasons we've expressed, that the contracts are interim in nature. There's a commitment to go to Congress built into the settlement agreement itself. There's no actual record on
this. To Congress, but not to wait for approval.
What the settlement agreement sets up is a process by which, I mean, these withdrawals have been happening, you know, under the live and let live agreement that was, you know, passed by the three states and Congress in 1992. You know, this situation was ongoing for 10 years. The Corps got sued by the power customers and said, you need to do something about this. And so what the Corps said is, this is a difficult problem. We need to go to Congress. In the interim, we need to formalize this relationship. And that's what these contracts would do. But again, that's just an initial determination about the Corps' authority. It's not a final determination. The Corps will still have to engage in the administrative process, produce an administrative record, and then at that point,
That gets you to the NEPA issue, but we're still struggling with the major structural operational change.
No, I think
do you accept the proposition that there is a one-third change here from the existing baseline?
I think it's 23% is what they've alleged from the baseline.
And do you accept
which was
that?
Zero. Well, I think it's a little more difficult than just saying 23%. They go from a zero, but we have this dispute among the parties about what the original authorization was. The Corps' position is that at least there's an incidental benefit for water supply, and that the water supply was at least an anticipated benefit of the reservoir. And so you have to take that into account.
If we disagree with you on that, then what? What's your answer to Judge Silverman's question?
Well, I'm not sure on the numbers. I think it would be a little bit less than 23%.
What's the baseline?
I think the baseline, there's two, you have to look at both, right? You have to look at the original authorization, but you also have to look at what the current status quo is. I think the initial inquiry is there a major change from the status quo?
Well, let's look at the current status quo. What's the change? How does the agreement change the current status quo?
Okay, the current status quo, at the time the settlement agreement was signed,
right,
that was the live and let live agreement, which was that people who had the ability to withdraw water retain the ability to withdraw that water with reasonable increases. That's exactly what the settlement agreement does. It just formalizes that agreement.
Well, I thought the settlement agreement didn't deal with withdrawal of water, just the reserving, the storing of water.
They're interrelated.
That's what their argument is.
Well, no, I mean, the withdrawal of water is permitted by the state.
Right.
But the way the Corps figures out, I mean, the parties aren't, these parties aren't interested in just having water sit in a reservoir, right? I mean, there's a reason they buy the storage, and that's to effectuate the withdrawal.
Again, that's their argument. Yes, I understand that point.
Well, I think
we're
that, that's
trying
right.
to figure out. What is your position with respect to the baseline? In your brief, you say that the appellants here, or the petitioner, the appellants, never ever assert, produced any evidence to show there was an incremental change caused by this agreement.
That's true.
Yet it seems to me you're conceding flatly that there's a 23% change caused by the settlement agreement.
Well, no, I think what we said is there's no evidence.
No, what have you said? Not we said. What have you said?
There is no evidence that a 23% change affects a major operational change in the reservoir.
So you conceded there is a 23% change.
I think that's what the record shows.
Okay.
That the reservoir, there will be 23. We concede that 23% of the reservoir will be allocated to storage under if these agreements are taken out.
Is that 23% more than there was allocated before?
Our position on the original authorization is that there was no allocated storage space in the reservoir for municipal and industrial water supply. That's why we go into the Water Supply Act in the first place. But water supply was an incidental benefit of the project and an anticipated benefit.
Counselor,
so that's relevant.
Why am I having such difficulty here? But I'm sure it's my defect. I'm trying to understand what is the incremental change that you concede has taken place by virtue of this settlement agreement with respect to the amount of water stored before for withdrawal as compared to that which will be stored in the future for withdrawal by Georgia.
Okay, a couple of things. One, the original authorization, so the zero that they're talking about, there's no allocation for storage. I'm really trying to answer the question.
The question is simply under what is the status quo at the time of the settlement agreement as to the amount of the water that is stored for withdrawal from Georgia, for Georgia, as compared to the amount that is reserved for Georgia after the settlement agreement?
I believe that the status quo at the time of the settlement agreement was about 145,000 acre feet.
Right.
Okay, and that the settlement agreement itself, it's 200 and... It's 240,000. So I think it's 100,000 increase from that status quo until now. I'm sorry, I misunderstood the question.
So it's 100,000 increase.
Yes.
Out of a total storage of what?
The total storage in the lake is about 1 million acre feet.
So it's 10%.
Yes.
There's a 10% change.
And do you think the Corps can do a series of 5% changes that might be minor that end up with a 25% change, 50% change, and thereby not get congressional approval for something that in the end is a major change?
I think at some point the Corps is going to have to go to Congress, right? I mean, I don't think that the Corps can No, I understand. It is the question in this case, and the Corps has said it's going to go to Congress, right? I'd set up an interim, arrangement to deal with this until the Corps does go to Congress.
But
of course,
counsel,
this is not a
counsel,
case.
So that's not a response because under the statute, you have to go to Congress before you take the action, afterwards.
What the statute says is only if there's a serious effect or a major operational change. Our position is that because There's no permanent rights that vest at the end of this period, and coupled with that we're going to Congress, that those that major change isn't going to happen, and there's not a serious impact. That's how it relates. I'm not sure if, well, on the bad faith question.
Has the Corps ever approved anything of this size that for storage that wasn't in a reservoir that wasn't originally authorized for local water supply without the approval of Congress?
I only know the acre footage of the largest, which was, I think, is 75,000 acre feet.
So this is the largest ever that's been done without congressional approval?
On an acre foot basis. I'm not sure on a percentage basis. I think it is on a percentage of the reservoir basis, too, but I'm not sure about that. It's definitely the largest acre foot reallocation. But I want to be sure that, you know, I make one more point, which is that this, we've assumed now that the settlement agreement will actually be carried out. But there is a NEPA procedure, and these reallocations may never happen. And the Corps ought to be given an opportunity.
Council, the NEPA procedure doesn't strike me as your most serious problem. The problem you're having here, at least with several of the judges, is trying to explain to us why this is not a major operational change.
No, my only point is that there's sort of a...
I must say I was a little more persuaded by your brief than I am by your oral argument.
Well, I apologize for that. What I'm trying to say is that there's sort of two conceptions of the settlement agreement, competing conceptions, right? One is in Alabama and Florida's world, the settlement agreement equals a reallocation of storage. In our world, it doesn't equal a reallocation of storage. Right, we made an initial determination that we can reallocate storage, but we still have to engage in the administrative process, including the NEPA process, and make all of these determinations
so
final.
Council, just one question. If we conclude that this is a major operational change, then appellants win. Isn't that correct?
If you conclude that per se, on its face, the Corps could not, there are no set of facts under which the Corps could engage in this.
Wait a minute. You've given the facts. You've given us the facts. You've said the change is from 145,000 to 240,000, which is a change of 10% of the water in the reservoir.
It does that on an interim basis while we go to Congress. That's right. If you determine on those facts that it's a major operational change, then I think that's right.
Then you lose.
I think that's right.
And what is and is it your position that 10% is not a major operational change?
10% in the context of this settlement agreement is not a major operational
change.
Why
is 10% not a major operational change? Is it because it's interim, or is it because 10% is not that high of an amount?
Well, it's because it's interim, for one. It's in the circumstances in which it's interim that we've already committed to go to Congress, and because
Council, I don't understand why you keep saying you've committed to going to Congress. That doesn't help your position at all.
Well, I will not say that.
No, but you understand why I say it doesn't help your position, because if your opponents are correct, you had to go to Congress before you did this, not afterwards.
Well, if they're correct, that's true. I think.
I don't understand why you're constantly telling us you're going to go to Congress.
Well.
The question is whether this settlement agreement is to be approved or not.
That's correct. It ties into our view of what a major change is and what.
It's not a major change because you're going to go to Congress.
It's not a major change because it's only an interim change, and no permanent storage rights would vest at the end of the period. That's our interim argument, and that is set up so that we have certainty while we go to Congress.
If this was permanent, it would be a major operational change then.
I think that the Corps has said at this level, if it was permanent, we would need to go to Congress. We committed to go to Congress in the settlement agreement.
Council, you have to go to Congress beforehand, not afterwards, yeah. Right?
That's correct.
I mean, you're trying to make it look like we're close to the statute, therefore it's okay. But the statute requires approval, not going.
It requires approval if it's a major change, a major operational change.
So you would agree with me then that 10% would be major operational if it was permanent.
I think the amount of storage set aside, that's right. If it were permanent, I think we would.
Your whole case depends then on the proposition that this is interim rather than permanent.
Well, and the compensation mechanism also.
Well, the compensation mechanism is relevant for the purposes question. It's not relevant for the major structural change, is it?
Yeah.
or major operational change, or is it?
Well, no, it is. It is relevant because you're talking about how you operate the reservoir, and how you operate the reservoir is for the purposes. And so the compensation mechanism does relate to the operate. I mean, their argument is that there's an operational change because we're holding water. You shift the water releases, right? You shift it from peak times for hydropower production, and water releases go down later.
Wait a minute. Look at the statute. It says, which would seriously affect the purposes for which the project was authorized, or which would involve major structural or operational changes. So that operational change is a separate concept from seriously affecting.
Well, but you have to look at how you operate the reservoir, and how they operate the reservoir is for, you know, hydropower generation, for flood control. I mean, they're interrelated, and the operation of the reservoir.
Well,
but
reading that statute, you could have a situation that did not seriously affect the purposes, but which did have a major operational change. And then that which
no, you could have that. That's right. But I still think that.
So then, therefore, your major operational change, if I understand it, your argument basically is 10% would be, you concede with counsel, would be is a major operational change, but for the fact that it's interim.
I think that's what the Corps' position has been, yes.
Interim is interim?
Well, interim in this case is 10-year contracts set at 2013 levels for reasonable increases to that with a renewal for 10 years, and so that no rights vest at the end of those contract periods. Normally what happens is if you have a contract for water storage at the end of a 30-year payment period, it's amortized over a 30-year period, you get a permanent right to storage in the reservoir. So what we say is, if Congress, for example, said, no, this is no good, well, then at the end of the contract periods, the storage rights would vest back to the Corps.
So you can do temporary major operational changes for 30 years without the approval of Congress?
I think on the 20-year period that we have, I think only coupled with this is a very difficult situation that the Corps is trying to come up with a creative solution to. Getting Congress to act is a dicey proposition, and so to go to Congress, I think the two have to be coupled together. I don't think the Corps could just continually say, well, we're only doing this on an interim basis, and therefore we can avoid going to Congress. But I think in the context of this agreement, it's a creative solution that the Corps came up with that's legal, and it doesn't facially violate the Water Supply Act.
Anything further?
No, Your Honor.
I just have a question. Are you with the Justice Department?
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you. We'll hear for counsel for the state of Georgia.
Thank you, Your Honor. My name is Bruce Brown, and I represent the state of Georgia, and I'm speaking today on behalf of the state of Georgia and the water supply providers. Let me go straight to the point on hydropower and major operational change affected by the settlement agreement. With respect to hydropower, Judge Silberman is absolutely correct, is that there's simply no connection necessary for prudential standing between Florida's injury that they have articulated and the hydropower interest. Absolutely none at all.
So
none at all.
If all the water stops flowing to Florida?
Then they go to the Supreme Court, Your Honor, for an equitable apportionment change. And that I didn't mean to be quip
no,
with
no,
that.
No, I hear you.
But that is the remedy. That is their remedy. The interest that they're asserting at the state line is an interest that only one court in this nation can address. It cannot, as a matter of law, provide standing for any other court in any other injury. That is why this is such a mess.
Well, now, wait a minute. I'm inclined to agree with you with respect to the purpose question, but are you suggesting that Florida and Alabama have no standing to assert there's a violation of the agreement because of major operational change?
Your Honor, on major operational change, I am.
Saying that, but there's nothing in your brief, anybody's brief to suggest that.
Well, that's because there's nothing on operational change.
Wait, counsel, hold it.
That's not true.
There's a lot on operational change. No one has argued before us that Florida and Alabama have no standing here to assert a violation of the agreement based on major structural operational change. Now, standing, of course, is an issue we can take up by ourselves. But I don't see that argument has been presented at all.
Your Honor, you're correct. The focus has been on hydropower interest. The where we're talking past each other is the definition of operational change.
Would you concede that Florida and Alabama have a standing to assert a violation of the agreement based on major structural or operational change?
Not in the least, Your Honor. We're not conceding that. Operational change is operational change to Lake Lanier.
Yes.
Not to the system. It's a federal reservoir,
right,
that is in the state of Georgia.
Right.
And what operational changes are they talking about? Are they talking about?
No. We're talking about standing now for a moment. Not there. We'll get to the operational change for a moment.
They
have standing because they have a right to assert that there is a diminution in the water flow that's coming to Florida and Alabama.
Your Honor, we don't interpret.
Not the hydroelectric power. That's a separate issue.
Okay.
But they certainly have standing to claim that there's a diminution of the flow of water for fish, for recreation, for any reason.
Your Honor, we have never viewed operational change as being the same thing or even anything close to the hydrograph at the Florida state line 300 miles downstream. We have never thought that when Congress said operational change of this reservoir.
Will you accept that they have standing to raise the argument? Now you can go to the merits of the argument?
Yes, we will accept that they have standing to assert a claim to their injury at the state line relating to water flows.
Okay,
Now
let's go to Judge Kavanaugh on all three of our questions on major operational changes. If I understand it, the government concedes that this agreement causes a 10% change in the amount of water reserved for Georgia, or for the M&I?
Yes, Your Honor.
Why is that not a major operational change?
By operational, the way we have interpreted operational is it changes the way the Corps operates the reservoir, just as it says. It also says major structural change.
Right.
It's not talking about the structure of the ACF river basin. It's talking about
the physical structure.
I know, but it's talking about the physical structure of that reservoir. That reservoir is 300 miles upstream. There's three other federal reservoirs between them. There's the state of Georgia that actually controls how much water is being withdrawn, not the Corps. We permit that water. No water gets out of there unless the state of Georgia says it's okay. So there is a firewall between the operation of Lake Lanier.
Council,
what's that
got to do with the price of tea? We're still trying to figure out whether this is a major operational change.
Your Honor, we have not been able to Florida's entire argument on operational change is they don't define what they think operational change is. They don't say it. They say
reallocations are operational changes, and this is a significant one, so it's major.
We think that if Congress wanted to say that reallocation of storage, the percentages of storage reserved, is the trigger, they would have said that. But they didn't say that. What did they say? They said
modifications to include storage need congressional approval if they involve major operational changes.
And our definition of operational is how the Corps operates that reservoir, how it does the hydropower.
You don't think setting aside a quarter of it for storage for local water supplies is operational?
I do not. I think that's
an operational change?
What you just described, Your Honor, would be looking at the effect upon project purposes. Not the major operational change.
Council, I'm trying to have a little difficulty seeing where this argument was presented.
We're the appellee, Your Honor. Okay.
Yes.
The major operational changes, they said in a conclusory fashion.
No, where is the argument you're presenting now, where is it presented in any brief?
Your Honor, I'm responding to the
Council, where is this argument presented in any brief?
Repeatedly, we have said that there is absolutely no evidence in the record.
Where? Which brief? I'm mystified.
Page 24 of our brief. We say there's no record evidence of operational change. And
that's a separate question from a definitional issue.
Well,
the definitional issue you're raising now is brand new, as far as I can tell.
Your Honor, it's in response, in a way, to your questions, which suggested.
I know it's all my fault.
No, it's not. Is that what you did? It was equating operational change to the flow regime downstream.
Well, that's exactly what their whole argument has always been. If you were going to respond to that, it seems to me you might respond to it in a brief.
Well, we've responded to it in spades. And another thing that we've responded
You haven't responded on the definitional point. I mean, I'm interested in this argument, but it's not in the brief.
Well, Your Honor, the
I'm trying also to figure out what do you mean by operational change? Can you give me some examples? If this is not an operational change,
how you run the dam? What gauges
how you run
you
the
have?
Dam? Okay.
How you run the dam? What gauges you have? What boats you need? All of those things might be.
No. But you don't think, or do you think, Congress thought that it had to approve what gauge the Corps used?
No, but it did if it was major or major structural. So if it was a major structural change, they did. So yes, I think
But if you set aside 100%, because under your theory, if 100% were set aside, it's still not a major operational change.
It would probably have a serious effect on project purposes. That's the way we view it, is that the shift in we're not.
No, not if you paid the hydroelectric power people enough under your theory. Yeah. There'd be no effect on purpose because they would have got enough money to buy power elsewhere.
Well, certainly there may be a matter of degree, and the Corps has driven the line of where it has, and as
So you can't answer Judge Kavanaugh's question as you did. The question is, would you still take the position that 100% change was not an operational change, 100% change in storage?
You would look at what is the effect upon the authorized project purposes. And if it had a serious effect on project purposes, then of course
it would
be
unlawful. So now you're back to the accepting their view that they have a right to challenge the project purposes.
Not in the least, Your Honor. Their interest is in the amount of flow that they get at the state line.
They want to funnel operational changes into serious purposes and then say they don't have standing to raise that.
But I would like to say something else about the
strategy.
The assumption. That this has anything to do with Florida, even if you concede all these things. This is a graph. They didn't put up any evidence showing what the flows really happen if the settlement agreement is executed. This is the graph that our experts put in, showing the difference, the delta between executing the interim contract.
They don't have to put any more evidence. The government has conceded that this agreement will have a 10% impact in changing the amount of water reserved to Georgia.
Your Honor,
So if the government concedes that, why do they need any more evidence?
Your Honor, the agreement unquestionably is for water storage, and the water storage is in the interim contracts. They're right there in black and white. It's not a contested issue about how much water storage the settlement agreement would grant.
I thought it was contested what the baseline was, but it isn't. Apparently it's not contested either.
The baseline, I think, is very interesting, and the baseline issue has not been developed.
It doesn't have to be. They've conceded it. The government's conceded it.
Well, I'm not a potted plant, and we haven't conceded the baseline issue. And if it's the baseline you're talking about, that is a very thick wicket, because if you want to go back to the baseline, you would have to go back to how much power Congress actually authorized for Buford Dam in 1946. It was, I believe, it's 60,000 kilowatts. After Congress funded Lake Lanier, the Corps built bigger turbines. And now you're going to be rationing back a little bit from that. So
baseline is how much storage was authorized.
If it's project purposes, if the baseline is considering what's the effect upon project purposes,
okay,
then the baseline would be what's the impact on hydropower. It doesn't say serious impact upon percentages of storage.
On the project purposes, that might be the baseline. On the major operational change, when you're talking about storage, why isn't the baseline zero, since zero storage was contemplated at the beginning?
We, of course, disagree with the notion that operational changes is that. But as a matter of I think what I can argue is the facts, is that the interim contracts, if executed, would grant storage where there was none before. So, I mean, I think that's conceded, and what legal consequence that has, I think, is up to interpretation of the statute. We would say that the whole 10%, 23% misses the point, because Congress didn't use that metric. Congress said, and it used a general term that would give it to the Corps to have some discretion in interpreting.
Hasn't the Corps in the past used this metric?
The amount of water storage?
Mm-hmm.
It looks at a lot of things. It looks at the hydropower.
So the answer to my question, yes?
I believe I believe it has, yes. And it uses the, to answer it further, although this doesn't help.
Yeah. No, you can explain it, but I think
they actually use, they use percent to govern who in their organization has to approve a different withdrawal. So, yes, it's not an irrelevant thing, and it's one rule of thumb. But in looking at the statute and from the court trying to address how, what's the best way to interpret it, the easiest way is to look at the words of Congress and say, serious effect upon hydropower. And then the first question is, are these people here to raise it? Clearly not. Serious impact on operations is not redundant to the serious effect. It's something different, and it's also in the same clause as structure.
Incidentally, you just made an interesting point at the beginning on which I agree with you. This is not an APA review, right?
That's
this
correct.
Is not an APA review. But the keeping that in mind, you just suggested we should defer to the Corps' definition of operational change, didn't you? You just suggested that in answer to Judge Kavanaugh. Congress entrusted the Corps with the definition. You don't really mean that, do you? Because this is not an APA case.
I do in a different way.
In a different way?
In a different way, Your Honor.
What do you mean in a different way?
Congress chose those words.
I'll buy that.
Congress chose general words.
Yes.
And you have to look at the words that they chose. They chose words that are by their nature matters of degree.
True.
And it does not give anyone a private cause of action. It's talking about what the Corps may or may not do.
Right.
I don't think it needs to be a strict APA case for our presumptions about what agency, the role between the court and the agency to be respected. I'm not sure of that.
The government has not asserted that they're entitled to deference with respect to interpretation of operational change.
My argument is not based upon the Corps' interpretation of their statute. My argument is based upon a good legal interpretation of congressional intent.
So then we shouldn't defer to anybody. We should make our own judgment.
Well, I think that if the Corps has determined along a continuum a particular interpretation of the statute, and if, as Alabama and Florida concede, they have no evidence to the contrary, then you have to affirm. What this case is about from our perspective is what is the burden in this circuit for a party challenging not just an agency, but us and any other defendant. They, on page 14 of their brief, they say one of the most startling things you could read, and that is Alabama and Florida had no obligation to develop a record. Now, no trial lawyer has ever
heard that before. Because their theory is 25% change is a major operational change, or it's seriously affects the purposes on its face. I mean, I think that's their...
Yeah, it's a facial
or to put it another way, as a matter of law.
Right.
Well, but 25% of storage, there's a number of different pieces of reasoning that you need to get between 25% of storage to major operational change.
Can I clarify one thing? I think you actually disagree with the way the Corps in the past has read the meaning of the word operational, because the Corps in the past has indicated that reallocation for storage, changing that, is an operational change.
They may have.
Do you agree with that or not?
The Corps a lot of times looks at them together. I think in the Stockdale memo, which
right.
is referred to,
yes.
Mr. Stockdale does lump them yeah. together. And we would not interpret it that way. But also in the Stockdale yeah. memo, he distinguishes this particular agreement in that footnote.
Mm-hmm.
So if that's the authority, then you have to live with it. And if it really
not
is an estoppel.
This is footnote 2, is it?
That's correct. And if it's
but there's no authority cited in footnote 2.
But the whole
It's an assertion.
And what it's in is the single document that they're using. And they're saying, government, you're stopped because you said something different someplace else. And what we're saying is, no, they're not. He explained it in that memo.
Actually, the law is fairly clear on the government has never stopped,
never
or virtually stopped. Never stopped. Justice Kennedy wrote an opinion said almost never. But they couldn't think of any case in which there would be a stop.
They're never stopped until they are.
No, they're not a stop. Government is not a stop.
But the notion is what does it take for a litigant to set aside agency action or to bear the burden of any claim against a defendant? And what is the role of the appellate court in reviewing the record? Is that all of these questions that you have that you have asked are great questions about a lot of issues that were never developed by Alabama and Florida in the court below. They made a facial attack. They didn't present any evidence.
The district court didn't address major operational change at all.
Did not. And I it's a reflection of the dominance that it had in the hearing. Very little. There were a lot of other issues. There were a number of other issues. It's easy to say now, in looking at the trial court, that he missed one. He did. But he was also dealing with this secret, you know, the dominating theme was that this was some cocked up secret agreement. And they're still bringing it out. Three-time losers on that issue. And they're still bringing it out. Why? Because they didn't put up any other evidence. That's why. And so the decision for the Court of Appeals is that when parties challenging any defendant's, not just the agency, but any defendant's conduct, what did they have to prove? And what is the role of the appellate court in reviewing the record at the time the district court made that decision? And if the plaintiff doesn't make his case, he loses. It doesn't matter if the defendant was wrong or not. He loses every single time. And that's the only way to manage the appellate process, only way to manage the district court. It's the only way to keep this court in its proper role with respect to an agency.
Anything further?
No, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, we'll hear from Council for Southeastern Federal Power Customers.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Clint Vince, representing the Southeastern Federal Power Customers. We're the hydropower customers. What I'd like to try to do is directly address the questions that Judge Silberman and other members of the court have asked us. First of all, on pages 23 and the top of 24 of our brief, we point out that that there's no evidence. The plaintiffs did not present evidence on the major structural or operational changes. And then in the next sentence down, we point out that we're the only party that has standing on these issues. And in a little
which
further,
issues? Which issues?
It's right here, Your Honor.
No, but is it fair to say you may be the only party that has standing with respect to the purpose issue?
Yes, I agree
but
with
it. It's not fair to say that you're the only party that has standing with respect to structural or operational changes.
I would respectfully differ, Your Honor. I agree with you exactly on the we are the only party with standing to argue project purposes. We've also stated in our brief I would also say, I argued the 11th Circuit case for hydropower. I think your interpretation is exactly right that they have standing to argue downstream impact, and we're not taking that position. Where we differ respectfully with the court is we do not believe that Florida and Alabama have standing to argue the operational change, and we do not believe they have standing. We do not believe they've put in any evidence.
Wait a minute. Why do they not have standing to argue operational change?
Because
if it can affect downstream water supply.
It's
water flow.
To the extent it affects downstream water flow, we believe they have standing.
That's what I thought.
With respect to the impact downstream.
Right. So that means they have standing to claim that this is a major operational change that hurts us.
Your Honor, part of the problem we have here, let me move off that point.
Maybe you should go to the merits. Why is this not a major operational change?
It's not a major operational change because nothing at the project is changing in terms of how.
What about Judge Kavanaugh's question? Suppose there's 100% storage pulled aside for
my sense
Georgia.
Is if there were 100% storage pulled aside, Your Honor, that a court would facially look at that and say that's a serious problem. Which really
we said it's a major operational change?
Yes, of course.
Well, then why is 10% not a major operational change?
Because what's really happening at these projects right now is there's very little change at all. This water's been flowing. This water's been used.
You're saying there's no change.
There is very.
Well, the government says there's 10% change.
Your Honor, we do not agree with the government's concessions.
Yes.
On page 37 of our brief, we talked about the major operational changes and the fact that basically what's happening right now operationally is a de facto recognition of the status quo. Under the live and let live clauses, et cetera, this water was already going to the recipients of it. The huge problem we're having here today is we're arguing about factual evidence that's not in the evidence, that's not in the record. If this had all been presented by the appellants,
the government has conceded that there's a 10% change.
How can we disagree
with the government's concession?
I think you have to look at the that's a real dilemma for me, Your Honor, as the plaintiff in this case. I'm sorry the government did that. We've settled this case 4 years ago. We did it after 2 years of court-ordered mediation. We settled it on the basis that we essentially asked for in our complaint, which was compensation to hydropower. At that time, this water was already being used by the Atlanta region.
So assume there's not a concession. Let's just argue it straight up.
Thank you so much.
For a second. I just want
to point to page 37.
I just want to try to get your argument without that coloring it for a second. Why isn't the baseline zero? Why can incremental, de facto, ad hoc, whatever, changes over time become the baseline against which you measure this new set of contracts?
Your Honor, my best answer to that is that under the live and let live provisions of the MOU, which is in after 556 in the joint appendix, that was taking place pursuant to a interstate compact among the three states. When we sued the Corps, it was already happening. The operations haven't changed.
So this is what I'm getting at, a series of minor operational changes that don't require congressional approval could add up, if you add them together over a series of years, to what would obviously be a major operational change. And is it your position that therefore means the Corps does not need congressional approval? So if they kind of go, you know, from 1 to 2 to 3, they can do it, but if they go from 0 to 3, they can't do it?
No, I think the Justice Department attorney was correct that there has to be ultimately, that these are interim contracts designed to deal with the status quo right now, and I think ultimately.
I'm not sure I got your answer to my question.
Yes, there should ultimately be congressional approval if there's a permanence to this or if there's a subterfuge.
So you're resting everything on interim?
Not everything, but I think it's critically important. I think that distinction
is 30 years or is interim?
20.
20? 20 years.
Actually,
temporary.
10-year
operation.
Get to the first. I'm sorry, am I interrupting you?
No, go ahead.
The first contract is 10 years.
Right.
Southeastern then gets to sue after that 10-year period. If we don't sue, they can be rolled over for an additional 10-year period.
And where do you get the authority in the statutory language for a 10-year major operational change without congressional approval?
I do not concede that the 10-year change is a major operational change.
I know,
change.
But assume it's I thought we were agreeing that it otherwise would be a major operational change, but it's interim and therefore an interim and therefore is not.
It also
major.
Doesn't change the what has actually been going on at that reservoir for.
Okay, that's a different argument.
Yes, Your Honor. Could you repeat your earlier question?
Yeah, I think what you're saying, you got two different things going on about the baseline and the interim, but. My earlier question was, can you do a series of interim additions that add up to a major change but somehow evade congressional approval because you've done it in interim steps as opposed to going from step A to step Z in one fell swoop, in which case you would need congressional.
I think there's a tipping point. The Congress did not state it with precision. Didn't define it with precision what a major operational change is, but I think that
How do we go about trying to define it? There's no agency there's no agency determination to which we can look. We have to decide on our own. It's a question of law, isn't it? We can't.
I would have submitted that it's a failure of presentation of evidence to you. I don't think this is an administrative case. Administrative Procedure Act case.
It is clearly not an administrative. Don't we have before us inevitably the question, what does major operational change mean?
I don't think you reach it because I don't think the appellants in the case below gave you an evidentiary basis that you could review, and I think that's a failure of proof on their part.
But they're entitled to rely on the Corps' documents, are they not?
They are, but they are extrapolating them in a way that's incorrect. What they don't.
No, but I mean, I understand that the government's attempt in its brief to distinguish, but the 1989 PAC and even the 2002 determination, isn't that indicating at least heretofore what the Corps has had in mind?
No, there are two critical distinctions that came about, we think, by our lawsuit. One is those requests were for permanent allocations, not interim. And interim, again, isn't the last word, but it's extremely important. And the second thing is, there was no provision in that 1989 PAC report for compensation to the hydropower purpose, which is a really critical point. And also, without record evidence and frankly sandbagging us in the reply brief, their statement about the hydropower benefits, et cetera, are completely false. We get the Your Honor, Judge Silverman was exactly right. We get the replacement power costs. We're not for profit. We flow that right back through. And the benchmark competition, which they've conflated in the reply brief, is that our retail rates are lower, and that causes competing private utilities to keep them down. We're faithful to that. It's important, too, that the independent government agency that reviews our contracts oversees them, the Southeastern Power Administration, is also a signatory to this agreement and gave their imprimatur to what we were doing. They're not a litigant, but they looked independently at what was happening here and did not believe it to be a subterfuge. That's the agency that should be protecting the Treasury and the taxpayer. We feel part of the reason that we're having this controversy here today is the absence of proof. We never got to argue. We never got to present to the district court the counterarguments to these arguments that we're arguing here at the appellate level on what was the status quo, what was the bench line, what were the operational changes. We cite in our brief also, and it's in the joint appendix at 1449, paragraph 33, Florida's own expert conceded in testimony, quote, "I have not seen any analysis of cost to hydropower." There is no diminution in the hydropower benefit here, going to Judge Silverman's question about the project purpose. There was no diminution, and there's no record evidence whatsoever to suggest there was. On operational change, Judge, the district court.
I don't understand. I just need to be clear on that.
Yes.
If at least 23% of the water is now going into storage.
We do not.
Are you saying the same amount of water flows downstream?
No, we don't concede the 23%. I think our people thought it was 18, but if we assume 23%, the same amount does not flow downstream. But there is evidence that was presented by Georgia in this case that the downstream impact was imperceptible. It's in the administrative record. There is no countervailing evidence by the appellants that no, there is a huge impact downstream, and this is what we
all
further.
All they have to have is a minor impact downstream to have standing. Then they can argue the operational change. All you need is an identifiable trifle.
Your Honor, they have not presented what their.
Oh gosh, all you have to do is say there's some diminution in the water flowing downstream in Alabama and Florida have standing, particularly under recent Supreme Court cases.
But the dilemma on proof of the operational change is.
That's a separate issue.
Yeah, that's
a
separate.
I think
if we've. Anything further, counsel?
No, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, we'll hear from appellant Alabama.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd like to focus on the three very significant concessions that were made, one each, by the three people arguing for the appellees, which I believe compel reversal of the district court. The first and biggest concession is by the United States that if the amount of operational change taking place as a result of this agreement is major. That's the concession. The only effort they make to try to save it is to say, but somehow it's different because this is an interim, two consecutive 10-year terms for this as opposed to permanent. But you can look long and hard at subsection D of section 390B of the Water Supply Act and see where Congress drew that sort of fine distinction. If there is a major operational change, it has to be approved by Congress. Thus, the concession required shows that congressional approval is required. Second concession was made just a minute ago by Mr. Vince to Judge Rogers' question, and that was, do you concede that Alabama and Florida could rely on those core documents? Yes, that was the concession. The Corps said in those documents dating back to 1989 that this is something, and the Norwood letter going along with the 1989 PAC report, this is major, something major that has to be taken to Congress. They understood that. Third concession.
That was a concession made by Georgia, not by the government.
But that was actually a concession made by SCFPC.
Yeah, I mean SFPC.
Yes, sir.
They're not, they can't concede for the government.
Okay.
That's right.
The third concession made by Georgia, Your Honor, was when you asked him the question about compensation, and this goes to the hydropower purpose. He said, well, if we tried to take 100%, well, that's a matter of degree, so that might not work to get around having to go to Congress. I don't see how either the compensation mechanism can override it or not. And by saying that, well, if you get up to too high a level of the storage being reallocated to water supply from hydropower, then you'd have to go to Congress, I think that takes away any foundation to the argument that if compensation won't work at 100 or 90 or 80 and you'd have to go to Congress, it can't work at 30 or 20 or 10. You also asked Judge Silberman a very direct question to the government lawyer. How much water was allocated to water supply when, before this agreement went into was signed? There is a very clear answer to that question, and I never heard it. Zero. Zero water. It is clearly conceded in the record, and it's clear. Zero water was ever allocated or is still allocated to
them. You mean de jure or de facto?
I mean at all, de facto, both from the beginning and at any point up until this settlement agreement, not one drop of storage has been allocated to water supply at Lake Lanier. It's zero. So we're going from zero to 23%. And there's been a lot of talk about the live and let live clause, and that arose out of agreements of the states and was memorialized in the 1997 ACF compact. And what that said, for purposes of allowing the parties to try to negotiate a resolution, Alabama and Florida said, we'll allow reasonable increases in the withdrawals as the negotiations take place, but they forgot to tell you the but. But if the ACF compact collapses, there will be no vested rights whatsoever to those increases. The ACF compact expired on July 31st, 2003, and so there are no vested rights, and so they can't come in and say, well, live and let live is the status quo, but forget to tell you the kicker, which is as a matter of federal law and enacted by all three states, there was no vested entitlement to that. I also want to briefly refer to, somebody said in their presentation that there was no evidence of any downstream effect. Alabama presented the affidavit of Trey Glenn at Joint Appendix 1615 showing the effects downstream, so that is in the record. We believe, in light of those concessions and the arguments contained in our brief, the district court must be reversed.
Thank you. The court will take the case under advisement.
Stand, please.